They report the level of the mysterious radiation continues to increase steadily. So long as this situation remains, government spokesmen warn that dead bodies will continue to be transformed into the flesh-eating ghouls. All persons who die during this crisis, from whatever cause, will come back to life to seek human victims unless their bodies are first disposed of by cremation.
Are you ready for the zombie apocalypse? Maybe you should check out the Zombie Research Society. Founded in 2007, the Zombie Research Society is dedicated to raising zombie awareness in the fields of science, survival, and culture. Become a member of ZRS and let your voice be heard. The life you save could be your own. Remember, what you don't know can eat you.
Log in to zombieresearch.org for more information.
Good evening, Terry.
I own a motel. That's important to you. And you'd be welcome to spend the night in one of the empty rooms if you'd like.
It burns! Oh, it burns! And I'm the devil!
Calling this the Valentine's Day Massacre.
In the town of Harmony, something unexplainable.
Hello?
Is happening.
Come here, you better check this out.
What is it?
This January. Prepare to witness.
What do you want?
The most frightening 3D motion picture event to tear through the screen.
Welcome to another episode of Necronomicast. I am Dr. Death.
And I'm the Reverend Podfather. And we've got a great interview for you today.
We are interviewing an actor by the name of Chris Carnell. He is better known as the Killer from My Bloody Valentine, the Miner. He's played in The Crazies, among many other things.
He's also a stuntman. Apparently he's been doing that all his life. So he falls to the ground for a living. And we're going to find out just exactly how badly he gets hurt, how he became a stuntman, actor, as well as now a producer and even more.
Yes, he's looking at getting into it even deeper. So hope you enjoy the interview.
All right, and here we are with Chris Carnell, who is currently, you're in California right now, right?
Yes.
And currently in bed in California.
Yes, it's the only... It's really the only place I'm comfortable at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you joining us here on Necronomicast. We wanted to talk to you a little bit about your career as a, I guess, would be a stuntman, actor, and whatnot. But right now, we just called you. What happened with your leg? Can you tell us what happened?
I wish it was a better story, but it's...
Everybody always does.
Saving the nuns from the train.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know... I was working on this TV show. It's a Disney show called Zeke and Luther. It's on the Disney Channel. And what happened was I was in the shot with the camera in this like ice cream truck kind of thing. And we were doing some crazy driving and near misses and taking out trash cans and into a building and it stops. And I'm doubling one of the actors. And the stunt driver was doubling one of the other actors. So we're doing all this crazy stuff and just getting all the shots from inside the car. And then what they want to do is they want to insert shots of the tire driving crazy. You know, the front tire is just, you know, zipping around and looking crazy just to, you know, add effect to how fast the vehicle's going.
Right.
So they get this golf cart, which had huge tires. It was lifted and it had big tires on it. And so we go about 100 yards straight, and then we hang a right, and we go about another 100 yards. And when we hung a right, the golf cart tipped over, got a cameraman on the back. He's like holding the camera low on the ground. And when I turned right, the golf cart didn't cooperate, and it dumped over. And we were forced to buckle in. I could have just jumped out of the golf cart and been fine. But there's no roll cage, and I'm buckled in. And so when the golf cart started to tip over, I stuck my leg out like a dummy. But the alternative was it was going to go on our heads.
Yeah.
So I kind of picked the lesser of two evils and just took it on my leg. And, you know, who knows? I might be paralyzed right now. Instead, I just have a broken leg. So that was the decision I made, and I'm out. No weight on my leg for 10 weeks and, you know, out for a long time. But I got a film coming up in this is kind of cool. It's perfect timing because I can't work until about this time. But at the end of May, I leave for Louisiana to start a project called No One Lives. And I'm not positive who the actors are yet, but it's a really good story, kind of horror thriller. Good story. So.
Oh, right on.
Very nice.
Look to that.
So how long have you been in your current career as a stunt performer? I mean, I'm assuming that's what you started out with. I mean, how long is it? When did you get into the industry?
Well, when I was a little kid, I did a couple things because there was a guy in my neighborhood that was like a movie producer, and I did a couple things for him just because I was a kid in the neighborhood and he liked me, and I got to do them, so I was a little boy doing that. But I was always called a crazy kid when I was growing up, you know, jumping motorcycles, jumping bicycles, ditching cops on my motorcycle, come on up. And skateboarding in pools. Did you guys see Steve?
Yeah,
Steve. He's a stunt dog.
Steve's a legend, and so. As time went on, they started to have a name for the things that I was doing, and it was called extreme sports, you know? Yeah. So I was kind of doing all that stuff on bicycles, skateboards, and motorcycles. And like Evel Knievel was someone I really looked up to and looked forward to seeing doing, you know, his jumps and stuff. So that's was a big influence on me, but, for sure, you know, just people calling me crazy. So then I realized, you know, it would be cool to learn how to fight. So I started taking martial arts, and they started coming out with all these martial arts films, like Chuck Norris guys and Steven Seagal and Jean-Claude Van Damme. And I was kind of at the height of those films, and they were looking for guys like me that could, you know, throw good kicks and, you know, had fight skills for film. So a Chinese production company came to my karate studio and picked me and a couple other guys, and we made two movies called The Masters 1 and 2, and they paid $300 a day, and they shot 6 days a week, two movies in a row. I thought I died and went to heaven. I mean, eight, you know, I was like, you know, 22 years old or something like that, $1,800 a week, and I was like, I want to do this for a living. And then I found out how much a union stunt guy makes, and I was like, holy shit. $300 a day was like chump change compared to that. And you get residuals and all this stuff. So I went after it, and everybody told me not to. And, you know, the people that told me not to were just because they cared about me, because I definitely chose a tough path. And
yeah, it can't be the most easiest career path. To get no, a to break into and also just to maintain.
Yeah, it's a slice of hell. But also, it's a, you know, people see me do my job and they want to be stunt people after they see me work for a day. You know, they're like, that looks like a fun job. And, you know, some days are fun and some days are brutal. And, you know, every once in a while you get pinched, and I just got pinched, and it's, you know, this has cost me a fortune being injured like this. I missed a National Visa commercial where I could probably make $30,000 to $50,000 on, you know, a big high fall on that show Zeke and Luther, which would pay really well. And I'm missing a lot of work. Pretty bummed.
Would but, you, would you suggest for somebody that was looking to get into that line of work, would you suggest it for somebody?
Well, you know, my son, my youngest son is inclined to do this kind of work, but I mean, it's pretty easy to die.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like going into the military. Yeah, most guys don't die in the military, but, you know, some do.
Yeah.
And, or, you know, maimed for life, or, you know, just before this happened to me, about 10 days before this happened, I was working, and Stunt Girls was in a coma for 5 days, and she's, you know, still in rehab.
No.
It's been close to two months later. And it's, you know, it's real shit that we do. And, you know, I always say we ain't baking cookies.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some days it looks fun and easy, and producers don't put a lot of credibility into what we do. They try to devalue it and stuff like that. But, you know, there's people out there paying the price for it, and it's pretty rough. But, you know, that's the bad news. The good news is it's been a fantastic career, and it's perfect for me because, you know, I'm a ADD guy. You know, I couldn't show up and do the same job every day. I'd eat a bullet. It would just that's not for me.
What's been one of your favorite projects to work on?
Well, I kind of get that question a lot, and I kind of answer it in twofold. You know, My Bloody Valentine put me on the map. Like, nobody wanted my autograph or wanted to meet me until I did My Bloody Valentine. I mean, I guess from Devil's Rejects, maybe some people did, but when I did My Bloody Valentine, all of a sudden, you know, I was like, wow, like, you do that? And I was like, you care? You know, people weren't interested, but that was like kind of an iconic character that I played, and people were interested in it. So that movie I had the most screen time on, and that was definitely, you know, fun for me to watch, because, you know, usually it's just a second or two worth of screen time for a big stunt, right? You know, but this was, you know, I was constantly up there, you know, hacking somebody to bits, or, you know, chasing. So it was a lot of fun. And then so that was the most screen time. And then the other movie that I had the most influence on was The Crazies.
Right.
And, you know, all that action in that film is mine, you know, from the truck roll to the big rig truck roll, and all the fights and the car work and everything was all mine, either designed by me or performed by me.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Very
nice.
Because
you did a whole lot of different things on The Crazies.
I
as an actor as well.
Car lunatics.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Now, was any of that actually filmed in Iowa?
Yeah. The truck roll, that SUV was there, and that town where there was just like wrecked cars and the whole street had debris all over it, and the front of the buildings were all fucked up. That was all in Iowa, in a small town called Lenox.
Yeah, because that's literally just within just a few hours of where we are now.
Yeah.
Oh, are you guys in Omaha? You guys are in Omaha?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So you just take that freeway that goes to there's a free whatever. That's east of you, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep. Yeah.
Lenox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you work as a stunt double for some of the main stars on these movies, and it looks like you follow them from movie to movie, and I'm assuming that's kind of a common thing throughout the industry. How do you actually do that? Do you have somebody that kind of hooks you up with a certain actor, says, well, he's got the same kind of build, or do they request you? You just said, okay, I got another movie for James Franco or, you know, whoever.
That's a really great question that a lot of people don't ask, but that is the key, you know, and an actor requesting you because you did a good job for them previously on a film is how I really like to get my work doubling, guys. You know, a lot of times there's ways to find out, like I could go to IMDb, type in James Franco's name, and you would see his height and weight, right? So then I would get that. If I was the stunt coordinator and I didn't know who doubled James Franco, I'd go and get that information. And then I start looking at these other places, a buddy of mine that might be that. You know, you want to hire your friends or guys that you know can do that job.
Right.
You know, and as far as like when I double Christian Bale, it just so happened that the producer of that film is a friend of mine. My brother was married to his sister. He was my, I guess, my brother-in-law. And every time he looks at Christian Bale, he thinks of me. And he goes, you got to come double this guy. You look like his brother. So that's how I got the job on doubling Christian Bale. But
you know, looking at you, looking at you here right now, you can see it on the screen.
Yeah, and you know they called me to double him in 310 to Yuma, but you know you got to be honest when they call, and I say I'm not a horse expert, so I said call this guy Richard Boer who looks like me, who is a horse expert, and he ended up doubling him on that.
Oh, really?
You know, what I mean, like I'd love to have taken that job, but they, you know, I would have let him down. And you don't want to be there being a lame horse guy when you took the – you just have to be honest.
Huh. So on your resume, they're able to kind of find out what your specialties are. I'm assuming that there are, like you said, different specialties for different types of stunt people as well. And does it help to have everything? Does it help to have acting skills? Does it help to have driving skills and rigging skills?
You know, it's like anything else. The more skills you have in your bag of tricks, the more money you're going to make, the more valuable you're going to be to the production company. Because, like, if they bring me to New Orleans to double an actor, but they need another guy to do this, and you could fit into the part, then they don't have to bring another guy in, you know, right. You know, airfare, hotel, per diem, blah, blah, blah. You know, so the more handy you are, the more valuable you are to the production company, and they want to keep you around.
Very nice.
Well, cool. We're going to take a quick break right now, and a little pause in the action. We'll be right back with our interview with Chris Carnell here on Necronomicast.
When I grow up, I want to be an astronaut.
I want to be a better Bedarian.
I want to be a princess when I grow up.
When I grow up, I want to be the president of the United States.
I want brains.
No one ever says, I want to be a zombie when I grow up. If you want to survive the coming zombie apocalypse, listen to Undead Air. Be entertained by stories, music, and reviews while learning vital skills to save yourself and your loved ones. Get it at UndeadAir.com or subscribe on iTunes. Remember, knowledge is power.
All right, welcome back. Dave, do you got anything you want to say?
I want to know about inspiration and lay to rest too.
Aha.
I'll go right to it.
That's my meat and potatoes right now. So, you know, as I get mature in this business, I'm 47 years old. You know, I really don't want to hit the ground like I used to. And I need to find a way to make a living in the business without, you know, sacrificing my body so much. So there's a couple things you could do. You could become an actor, you could become a stunt coordinator, or you could start producing films. And I'm actually trying to do all three of those and trying not to hit the ground as much as I used to, because you break your leg.
all in the name of Disney.
So check this out. So I get the call for inspiration, and it's a friend of mine who is a great writer and a really good director. His name's Jason Armstrong, and he wrote this film called Bitter that we already shot the trailer for, and there was some action in that, and I had an acting role, and then he wants to get Bitter off the ground, but it's kind of a bigger budget, and he needs to show these film distributor people that, you know, he can shoot a real feature film and that it'll, you know, be a good story and well shot. So we put this whole thing together, and so I'm a producer. I was the stunt coordinator. I had an acting role, and I'm the killer in inspiration. And so that's, you know, a lot of different hats to wear, you know, so we think we're successful in this. It's being edited right now, and we're hopefully going to get distribution through Anchor Bay. And we're already like trying to get our next project off the ground, which is going to be shot in Northern California. So I'm as excited as I can be, because you know, I'm not saying I studied The Secret, but I know what The Secret's idea is, and I basically felt that as I was getting older, I had to find a way out, and I did it. You know, I think I've got my little niche carved out, and inspiration is hopefully going to be my little springboard to continue to make films instead of, you know, being a hired hand. Right. And I hopefully will be able to promote some of my future projects through you guys. You know, we'll do some more interviews and discuss it. And
we would be honored.
You guys are like my Jay Leno.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. No, that's, you know, the cool thing about doing a show like this is that we've heard of a lot of different other horror podcasts and whatnot, but we're pretty fortunate in that we're able to get some interviews with all different types of people in the industry, and we really want to continue to develop relationships with you guys to have you back on, promote new movies or new projects you're working on. We would love that. So,
right. Well, keep, if you guys, like, go to my IMDb now and then, and if you see anything that looks interesting and you want to hit me with an email or whatever, you know, we can always have future interviews in the future. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now that you've been on the Necronomicast, I mean, geez.
Oh, that's it. You write your own ticket now.
Is it true, or was Dave blowing smoke up my skirt that somebody requested me to be interviewed here?
You were requested,
yeah.
Come on. All right, that's awesome.
And we're a fairly new show, so.
And I am a huge, huge horror movie fanatic. And like I said, I love the movie that you were in. And so, you know, like I said, you definitely have a fan here.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. I mean, that My Bloody Valentine put me on the map. But if Patrick Lussier, if he directs that, what's that movie called? Halloween 3?
Yes.
If he directs that, I hit him with an email now and then. And he goes, "You are my favorite killer, so you're, you know." We'll see. If I get that Michael Myers character, that would be
Cool.
Wow. Yeah,
pretty much blow me up.
Excellent.
Very good.
You guys have more questions?
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as Laid to Rest 2, that's directed once again by Robert Hall, and he did the special makeup effects for the Crazies. I'm assuming that's how that came to be.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw the last issue of Horror Hound magazine. It's got a green cover on it. Brett Wagner and I did an article on that called Killer Relationships. And they were curious how Brett and I got on that gig from the Crazies. And I was like, well, you know, it all stemmed from, you know, he's got this makeup effects house in LA called Almost Human. And, you know, like Kane Hodder's got a life cast there. I've got a life cast there. Brett Wagner, you know, it's kind of like these life casts sell for, you know, on the market for like thousands of dollars, right? Yeah. And this guy's got a collection of life casts probably worth, you know, like $250,000. He's got everybody. Wow. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen a life cast, but they completely encapsulate you in this like silicone, like, gross gel, and then it hardens, and you have to go to your happy place because it's very claustrophobic.
Have you done life casts there?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I do. I do the makeup and stuff like that too. So I've done that before. So.
Oh yeah, and our last guest was he's a special effects guy, Joe Giles, and he's in California. He's in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he said that was one of his favorite parts, is to bring in the guys and put goop all over the face and make the life cast. Yeah. It's cool to get to meet everybody and go, "Hey, I loved you in that film. That's great." And then here you go. And he just put
all that stuff on there. That's pretty much how it went in Almost Human. Like, I did that before I ever did a horror convention. And I walked in there and people were like starting to act weird and stuff like that. And I was like, "What's going on here?" And the guy starts applying the stuff. He goes, "Everybody here saw you in My Bloody Valentine. They're all excited that you're here." And I was like, "Really?" That was my first experience of like people being like a fan or whatever.
Yeah.
And
nobody ever comes up and goes, "God, I saw that fall you did, you know, from the 10-story roof. Wow.
I saw you doubling that actor, man. Yeah. That was great." No,
I totally knew it was you.
The stunt double thing is like an unsung hero kind of you know, Tom Cruise, they would talk about, "Yeah, I do all my own stunts." Yeah, fuck you.
Good luck. How many? What else have you? You broke your leg, but what other injuries have you had? You're not exactly like Evel Knievel and broken everything, have you, in your career?
I've not broken that many bones. I mean, I've broken almost all my ribs. My wrists have all been broken, and my nose a bunch of times. But I don't have a ton of breaks. But I've been severely burned, second degree burns, and. Wow. And the rib, you know, like massive contusions. All, you know, I've been in a coma for 5 days. I mean, I've been pretty wrecked. Not specifically from the stunt business, the coma. I got hit on my motorcycle when I was young, and by a drunk driver. And you know, I kind of put all these injuries together as like training to be a stuntman.
Right.
So, you know, some of them are not exactly on the job, but it's. It's been a long, painful process, and you know, I got this son that's following my footsteps. He's on a first name basis at the emergency room. The orthopedic surgeons know him. I'm like, you know, I go, "You sure you want to do my career? Because, you know, your resume of injuries is going to get much longer."
Yeah, I hope the stress levels now. You know, yeah. Stop jumping off of buildings, and then you're like, "Oh my god, I'm so stressed."
Let's hope this producing thing takes off. I'm telling you, this could be. This could be the future, man. I'm really excited about it.
Well, we wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, but so Laid to Rest, I'm purely have an acting role in it, and there's one stunt that I do in it where I get killed by.
Spoiler.
Well, listen, Chrome Skull is the guy in it, and he doesn't lose any fights.
No.
So. But you should see this guy that plays Chrome Skull. His name's Nick Principe. He's about 6'6", bald. You guys got to get that article with
from Horrorhound.
Horrorhound, because there's photos from it, and we have this little thing called the Kill Crew, and it's all of us that were basically in that film Laid to Rest. Including the director Rob Hall and all of us, and we made like biker vests that say Kill Crew on it, and they're pretty sick.
Got your own colors.
Exactly, we're flying our colors. I'm probably gonna wear one. You know, I'm not like the bikerist looking dude. You know, I'm kind of. I always say I look like Richie Cunningham, but you know, I'm a biker at heart. I don't cop the look, but you know that's how I feel. You know,
he's a biker on the inside.
Yeah, yeah, I on the inside.
Yeah, you just roll semi trucks, but yeah, he's a biker on the inside.
Bikers don't have shit on you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I think that you know when bikers meet me, they like brothers. They dig me. You know, they go like, oh, this guy's like. Kind of a badass, but he looks like Richie Cunningham. You know, like if you just saw me, you'd go, "That guy's a pussy." I think. Like undercover pussy.
Yeah, he just came off of the 10th floor.
Yeah, is that all you got? Come on.
Well, you know, you just struck on a thing that was like a little Achilles heel in the business. I was afraid of heights when I got in the business.
Oh man, so I'm terrified of heights. How did you get over that at all?
That is something that I just kind of told in confidence. I told the right guy that I was afraid of heights. And he goes, "What are you doing Saturday morning?" And I'm like, "Oh, nothing. Shit. What do you got?" Shit. And he's like, "I got a high fall tower in my backyard and an airbag." I'm like, "Okay." So in that day, I learned how to operate an airbag, you know, how it functions, how to wrap it up, how to unwrap it, and like the dangers of airbags and this and that. So in one day, high fall tower was 80 feet. So the airbag inflates to like 6 feet high. He goes, "Climb up to fit the 15 foot step, you know, height." And he had a trampoline. And he taught me the three basic things that you do into the airbag. There's a header, a face off, and a thing called a suicide. Where you just go fall backwards off of the thing, where you don't look back, you just trust. It's pretty gnarly.
That'll make your butt pucker.
So I practice all three of those on the trampoline for like 20 minutes, and I go, I feel good. He goes, okay, go up to 15 feet. Do all three into the airbag. One, two, three, bam. He goes, go to 20 feet. One, two, three, into the airbag. I mean, by the end of the day, I went to 80 feet, and you do the math. Every, you know, five, ten, I climbed up at 5 foot intervals, did it three times. I was freaking exhausted, but I had it nailed. I wasn't afraid of heights, as you know, into an airbag or boxes. Boxes is another way we do it.
Right.
If you don't have an airbag, boxes are filled with air and they break your fall. We do cars into boxes, everything.
Wow. I guess that would totally help at least know what you're expecting when you're falling to get rid of that fear.
Right. I mean, so, I got really comfortable. And now my highest into an airbag is 130 feet. So just imagine this. Put a postage stamp in between your feet and look down at it.
Oh, man. Wow.
That's what your target looks like.
That is an excellent visual.
Yeah, exactly.
I need to wake up in a cold sweat. Shit. Damn it, Chris. Yeah. You put that in my head.
Oh, and if you go into the airbag feet first or head first, you die.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's always that.
Because you is have that all? To spread the weight of your body and your arms out over the airbag to displace the air properly. If you go straight, you'll go straight to the ground if you go feet first or head first. So that'll
make for a bad day.
Yeah, that's that kind of visuals you got to give your kid. There you go.
There you go. Yeah. So I'm hoping, you know, through his my son's lacrosse thing, that he's going to get a scholarship, get an education, maybe get a job. But the way the world's going, man, maybe you don't get a job just because you graduate college anymore.
I know. Well, he can always, yeah, what you do is you steer him into the associate producer, you know, assistant producer, get him in his own line of your business, you know, so he doesn't have to feel gravity.
Because basically he'll be my bitch for a bunch of years.
There you go.
Do this, do that, you know, and then he starts to figure out how to.
Yeah, I got kids, I know, I feel you.
Much like Wayne is to me on the show. No, I'm just kidding.
Fighting words.
I know, I feel it. All right. Well, as long as we can have you back when you're on a new project, we will. And we'd like to see we're going to have to get a clip of the accident that broke his leg from the golf course.
There was no cameras rolling for that.
Right. Oh, come on, man.
Oh, man.
The camera that the guy was holding that was shooting the tire of the vehicle that we were following, that camera got smashed to bits.
At least nobody else got hurt.
Yeah. Oh no, that guy got hurt too.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't ask. If anybody else did.
He had the smarts to put a helmet on. He was wearing a helmet, so he's smart. But anyway, maybe if I come for the June thing, we'll do another in studio dealio or
something.
That'd
be awesome. That would be awesome. We'd really appreciate it.
Yep.
Well, cool. Well, again, thanks for being on the Necronomicast. Chris Carnell, you can see him in many different movies, either briefly or killing people or in a number of different production values. But we appreciate you being on our show and look forward to having you again. And you got anything else?
Nope, I'm good, Dave.
All right.
No, I think that's it.
All right, thanks a lot, you guys.
Thanks, Chris.
You've been listening to the Necronomicast, a weekly podcast produced by Tim Welch and Wayne Brecky, part of the Free Life Media Network. For show notes and other information, go to necronomicast.libsyn.com.